All right, I have hit record, so Michelle, you can take as much time as you need to bring
Yeah.
us in, and now we're doing the thing.
Oh, the thing is being done. Hello, ladies, gentlemen, gender non-conforming persons, people in the gender non-conforming community that call each other faggot all the time, but in the nice way. My name is Michelle Perez. I am joined by my homies Jake, my homies Ruben, and also a longtime homie in the creative world, Carta Monier, as a guest. Eliza is currently not with us at the moment. Many of the co-hosts sometimes come down with like fucking gamer's knee, various forms of like I don't want to say mild leukemia style gamer induced illnesses, but things of that nature. It's not worth dwelling on, and if I won't, then you shouldn't. And this is
Eliza will return.
Eliza will return. Eliza will tell me to never post a human asshole again, and I will do this 45 times. This is working on it. I'm Michelle Perez. Today, I was kind of thinking of what is sort of the antidote nowadays to what I would say are very cynical models of engagement cycles. I was thinking more specifically of Josh Hawley's book, where I don't know, he's going to call for some sort of pogrom of Antifa by way of crying about cancel culture and shit. And basically, at some point or another, the publisher dropped his book. However, the imprint owned by the same publisher would take up the case of publishing his book, even though it's basically an artificially induced and arguably maybe staged piece of dog shit that sort of exists in our current model of publishing as the sort of creating controversy in which to sell books. Or sensationalism in the most brief way I could say this without rambling, as I always do. And I think most large publishers hew towards that side of things. Sensationalism gets eyes on your product, it puts asses into seats. Shit, I was there was this 60-year-old gay man reviewing a fucking book. Where this actress was leveraging bad critical response specifically against this guy, as though it was some sort of culture war issue. There's a lot of this shit out there. And this is part and parcel with trying to survive in publishing with several large publishers, as social media and the internet are, and as well as hedge fund guys, are basically all trying to eat you alive. How does one move forward? How do you make anything of worth that resonates with people and touches them personally without debasing yourself in these ways? And I always hear a bunch of shit about sex workers debasing and fucking sort of commodity, making their relationship a commodity. And it's pretty funny because I find this sort of bad faith engagement model the clearest way of being a all three holes stuffed Dickensian whore thing. It's just pure raw dog. What is the antidote? What is the fucking antidote? And in my mind, It's not perfect. And it's not a one-size-fits-all solution. But in my mind, DIY publishing and doing shit on your own terms, because there are so many fucking sickos out there. And, you know, you just swim around in a pool of fucking sickos, you end up popping out of the pool of fucking sicko. And here is someone who is not a sicko, a good buddy from Ann Arbor, Michigan. I'm also a Michigander, so this is good vibes all around. Carter Munier. Welcome to the show, Carter.
Hi. Thank you. That was the wildest podcast intro I've ever experienced.
Well, I'm very glad to hear. I think it's going to become something of a Michelle special.
Oh, Michelle monologue. I fucking suck.
No, I'll just get that out of the way. Quite the opposite.
Holy shit.
This is what we call content.
Yeah, no, there's like chewing up the scenery, and then there's just very masturbatory. But, you know, self-aggrandizing aside, how have you been doing? How stings lately?
I mean, you know, it's like that pandemic answer that I feel everyone gives where it's like, good, you know, all things considered. So, yeah, that's where I'm at. Good, all things considered. Things are fine.
Yeah.
I've noticed a lot of, like, artists and stuff I used to follow in the past, in the previous Twitter before days. A lot of them have, like, locked and just said, I'm out, like, 2 months after it started proper. Excuse me. And basically, upwards of 20 people I used to follow from those days just fucking jumped off, which honestly, I used to think it was crazy, but it's been happening. Everything has been happening constantly. We've actually made a point to probably not talk about COVID as much. We maybe had our first mention of it in a previous episode. We kind of want to be unstuck in time. We kind of need to not be timely. At least in anything I've tried to do in a showrunnery capacity, I have tried to not have hot takes. I want to not have goldfish brain. And it's very hard on social media.
I feel that.
You make physical products, just to kind of get back on track.
I was going to steer the ship a little.
But with regard to that, I think what you do with Diskette Press has been very invaluable for a lot of people where they do try to tell work and stories. I feel that are of the moment, but not necessarily hue towards trans girls hit the town or whatever. I was kind of, in general, You're very about personalized work. And I had some questions as it regards that. And not to be too boilerplate, but when would you say you first got into creative arts or creative media and self-made media?
I mean, God, I feel like I'm going to be giving the answer that like every fucking piece of shit artist or writer does. So not to be all like, well, I was born with a crayon in my hand or whatever, but like I've always been really into making little books and zines. I would make books and zines for homework. Mm-hmm. You know, in college, a friend and I started a college like comics magazine that would release like once every week or 2 weeks. And then when I got out of college and was getting into indie comic stuff, I stepped away from sort of like any kind of editorial or self-publishing role. Mm-hmm. And then kind of got sucked back into it because I bought a Risograph printer. I got a really good deal and I owned one. And owning one meant like, okay, well, I'm going to be printing my own books and it would feel silly, not like my friends who are also in town, you know? And from there, it just sort of organically expanded into like, well, I might as well print books for artists I like, you know? So everything sort of fell into place.
What was the impetus behind the Risograph acquisition? Were you kind of looking to get a printer and it just happened to pop up? I know those things are definitely not especially easy to come by.
So, I mean, Risograph is something that used to be extremely ubiquitous in Europe and North America. And I mean, like, to an extent still is, but like before cheap digital printing, every like church had copy machine to print their newsletter, and every school had some sort of copy machine to print, you know, assignments or whatever. So there was a print shop in Chelsea, Michigan that I would get my work printed at. And at some point I asked them about like, well, do you offer Risograph printing? And they sort of gestured towards a machine that was like in the back unplugged, and they were like, oh, we have that one, but we haven't used it in a while, so we would have to charge you extra. And I was like, oh, okay, you know, that's fine, I'll think about it. And then like a year later, out of nowhere, they called my phone. They had my phone number saved from some order, and they were like, do you want this and like all of the accessories and whatever for like $250?
Wow. And, so they had even remembered you.
Because I was the only person who had even mentioned being interested in it, I guess.
That's wild. That's really
cool. Yeah, so it really fell into my lap. Like, you know, usually you can get yourself a Riso for, I don't know, under $1,000. But I hadn't, like, proactively been looking for one, and it didn't feel like we had space. But, like, this offer was so ridiculous.
That very much feels like a moment of fate type thing.
Exactly. So once I had that, it sort of became like an ongoing project, like to learn how to service it and get it up and running, and also get it to connect to a computer, because it has like a copy machine functionality, but the model that I have came out in like 98. So it was like a big expensive add-on feature to have like a parallel port, basically. So I had to get all of that stuff set up, but like once I did, it was like, okay, now I have this working machine and I might as well print for other people as well.
That's awesome.
I'm just gonna say, in terms of, I guess you would consider yourself, because I was looking over the site, you would consider yourself a micro press. In terms of self-publishing, you specified that, yeah, you kind of went through a very specific, not like a complete anomaly, because I think it's like a very specific and serendipitous thing, obviously getting. In terms of maintaining and sort of having an output of work and being able to actually control the publishing process, in terms of like decision-making, I'm very curious to hear, like, what sort of direction would you say you've kind of given Diskette Press, because you sort of very literally kind of control your own needs of production.
Right. I would say, like, our mandate is very much, like, printing work by artists who I want to draw attention to. I describe us as, like, a stepping stone publisher. Like, I try to pay as well as we possibly can, and we basically pay the artist like every piece of money that isn't like covering our own printing and me paying, you know, the employee that I have. My hope is that by publishing artists, they can draw the attention of bigger publishers who have more money, who can, you know, give them more of a livelihood. Because unfortunately, in like independent small press publishing, you know, it's not terribly lucrative most of the time. So I focus specifically on like marginalized and queer and especially trans creators. Whose work is cool and speaks to me of being like the owner operator of the operation, is that I can find artists whose work speaks to me and seems cool and just publish them. You know, like it's really not that hard, thankfully. And, you know, I have a contract that I give pretty much everybody, and it's very simple, and everybody retains all the rights and whatever. Basically, like Diskette licenses the rights to print for, you know, a certain region.
Whenever you want, for whatever you want, right. Thanks.
So, yeah, if you want to ghettoize anyone, Black, Asian, you know, any racial reason or someone's personal decisions in their life, talk about openly or freely within the workplace, or if you make the fucking mistake of coming out to your boss, yeah, you're fucked. Which leads to a few different employment situations. One, maybe you get into sex work. I've been there. Mm-hmm. Two, you're just unemployed, and your lot in life is either living with your parents, doing X amount of crowdfunding because you're literally ostracized to the point of not being able to get anything ever at all, or to basically be self-employed. So a lot of trans people I've known in DIY, in media, that's kind of where they were coming from. And in rare instances, they were cis in media, and then they transitioned openly, and the engagement vector for that shit sort of applied to them. And so they were, like, air quotes, controversial or this or that, which is fucking wild to think about. What I think the Diskette press story is unique to me is that for you, self-publishing, you seem to have kind of created your own way forward, as well as ways forward for others, which I find to be an excellent model. And I think, I don't expect everyone to get the $250 deal on a risograph out of fucking nowhere, but it's not a bad thing to look at in terms of uplifting yourself as well as uplifting others.
Yeah.
Not the rise and grind dog shit, but the, hey, I want some agency in this world, and this is how I assert it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, in terms of that, yourself as an artist, what were are some works of your own that basically have been recognized by others, as well as like works that, you know, you've made that means something to you personally, just off the top of your head, if you don't mind.
Sure. I mean, the most recent thing that I made that made like a splash, I guess, is the big sex zine napkin that I released at the end of 2019. So it's been a tiny bit over a year. And that is a really big zine, like 120 interior pages, where it collects these comment cards that I had partners fill out after we had sex, as well as a bunch of sex writing and pictures and things like that.
Hell yes.
Yeah, and like that's an example of a project that like I think I would have had a hard time publishing if I wasn't self-publishing.
Yeah, that's a very ambitious idea, let alone one to pitch to another publisher. Yeah, right,
exactly. And like it's very explicit and like very trans, you know, just about my own growing understanding of my own like place in larger queer community. So like that one is just going to be like at the top of the list. The current book I'm working on, that's like a follow-up in a lot of ways to Napkin, that deals more explicitly with the sex work online that I've been doing, is going to be similar. Like these are things that maybe I could get someone else to print for me. Yeah. Maybe I could get someone else to print these for me, but like the thing about having complete control over it is that I feel more capable of like pushing things and being weirder and less cagey than I would otherwise be. Like when I was taking all of my work to Chelsea, Michigan to have like a couple sweet older ladies print it, I would feel like pretty sheepish when I would go there with like a sex comic book and for them to assemble, and they were always cool about it, but like I, you know, it feels better when I'm doing my own stuff.
Yeah, totally. It's just like just those little things of comfort mean that you don't have to question yourself about putting out whatever you want to put out.
Yeah,
basically.
Exactly.
In terms of,
mm-hmm. If I can hold you up, Michelle, when you published Napkin there, was there any consideration in the design of the survey? I was taking a look at it over here to like maybe have like a graph where someone could get like on an X, Y grid. Were there any other considerations for the design of the comic book?
Or
do you just want to go real, like, do you want to go like into a grocery store box with it?
I based it conceptually on like those cards that you sometimes see in restaurants or hotels that are like,
that's
how
what
is
I was
our service today?
Restaurant one.
So I just tried to make it really simple and like universal. And then my nod to like complexity was to say like, please write further comments on the back. And like that's,
oh, I'm sure, I hope that,
yeah, like a lot of people did, like most people did. And that's where like the really interesting stuff happens. But yeah, I didn't iterate too much on that. Like I think the thing about having the ability to print my own work is that I think of something and then I can just do it. So like I thought of these comment cards and then I laid it out and I just printed them. And then I cut them and I was like, now I have these, you know, now I have like this absurd thick stack of these. So I guess I'd better start handing them out. Like there's like not a lot of hesitation.
Yeah, I was about to say, while it may not have been every partner that you've had, like in terms of reception, were most people like, oh, cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I would say, I mean, I didn't have any negative responses in terms of like when I asked people, would you be willing to fill out this card? And if I had, I would have made a note of it, you know, like, oh, you know, this many people declined to fill one out. But like, honestly, I think if someone is already hooking up with me, they have at least some familiarity with the fact that like I do art or zines or whatever. And even the people where I really just sort of sprung it on them, you know, like in the afterglow, like, oh, I have this thing in my purse. Would you be willing to fill this out? Like everyone always just thought it was funny, you know, like, oh yeah.
Do you have extra pens?
Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah. That owns.
Did you have extra pens or pencils with you? Or was that just like, we got to find something.
I have pens in my purse. Like every time I go to this diner in the area, I steal pens because they say this pen was stolen from Northside Grill.
Oh, that's just,
yeah. So, I mean, how can I not?
I'm thinking of all of like those like grandparent style diners that exist in Michigan that aren't like necessarily big diners. Cause I imagine, although I could be wrong, not every time you fuck someone, but like a good deal of times when people fuck one another, it's like, hey, let's get some food first at a place. I'm just imagining you like having some crayons you pocket from like the kids menu or something. And all right, so check this out. And they're like these oily, waxy fucking things where it's very hard to get it to like rub off
on
the
paper. They've been used by the other patrons.
Yeah, exactly. Or it's like recycled other crayons that aren't as effective. It's like a knockoff Crayola of a knockoff Crayola. Like proprietary big boys crayons.
I don't think...
Has anyone ever filled one out with a crayon?
I don't think anyone filled one out with a crayon. Now, like, I'm thinking.
Right?
I don't think so. I think everything... There might have been one. I don't know. One at most.
Would we all agree? Would we all agree that there would have to be a moment of some kind of consideration if someone had a crayon ready and sharpened to fill out the survey with?
Yeah, that would be special.
You would have to leave.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Hey, can you fill this out? Oh yeah. Do you need a pen? I got you there. Got a box of 12 ready to go.
Fuck.
Any color? Peach. Sage.
Puce.
Sharpened and by the bedside table.
Or the crayon box sharpener in it.
Oh, that was always, yeah, that's like the fancy tech.
I started having...
Well, that's the big ass box. That's not the regular box.
Yeah, you really have to pay up for
let's
that.
Make sure
that's
we like get this right.
The 2000 crayon
there's
box.
There's the 64, then there's the 128 box. The 128 box, more than likely, will have that sharpener. But that's
no, sharpeners start at like the 500 box, the fucking insane ones that are like five rows of crayons. I don't think it's that low. 126.
And they're all like racistly assembled. We've got the skin tone ones, and we've got
the white ones. The black ones are in the back left. The white ones are in the front center.
What's the line between food and skin tones that goes into Crayola naming schemes?
We'll never
know.
It's
all the same when you think about it. They're saying from a utilitarian perspective, there's little difference.
Mm. Yeah. Not to spoil too much of the book's content, but what was an example of the fill out your own that was kind of fun to print?
I mean, there was just so much variety. You know, one person wrote like that I was a spoiled little pillow princess. someone else wrote 10 out of 10. Would come down Carta's throat again.
That's what's up.
Yeah. I don't...
Just good. Yeah, just pull quote type material.
I don't have the original cards anymore. I donated them to the Leather Archives in Chicago as a piece of queer history.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool in and of itself. Yeah. That's awesome.
Can I pitch you a sequel?
Yeah, I stopped having people fill them out after I was done with the project because, like, my reputation was preceding me, and I started having people being like, I want to fuck you so that I can fill out a card. And I was like, okay, well, you know, like, I need a different angle now.
Back of the line, sir.
We gotta retire the gimmick for a little while.
I got a fucking... So, you know, I've been doing porn, and I got a fucking email today from a man in Greece... where he had attached a docx file called, you know, cardamonier.docx. And when I opened it, he had like typed out a comment card and pre-filled it out in hopes that we would fuck. He was like, I'm coming to America for business this summer. And, you know, so it's like, is this the first time you've had sex with Carta? And then it circled like, yes, but he's written like, you know, it will be the first time.
This is in the future or something. Yeah,
that's very fucking presumptive.
Shoot your shot. I suppose
that's not even shoot your shot. That's like wish casting, and then it's like signing up for an exchange of goods when the vendor is like not even having anything as an offering.
Yeah, no, that's no, weird, no. It was like the subject line of the email was filling up a card with hypothesis ... quotes you gave me.
Look, listen, at the least, if you come at the moon and miss, you'll come on the star.
Oh, that was good.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's wild.
Send help. Yeah, I mean, as a whole artist, I'm fuck, we're again, I wish Eliza were here, because this would probably be a fucking crazy brain trust in terms of people have created stuff and also done sex work. In terms of how your pornography has been incorporated into, I guess, your person, there's a lot of different countervailing philosophies about this. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people have maybe a prohibitionist stance on sex work, or have a sort of a decrim, but let's not encourage this. let's have ostensibly leftist beliefs, but socially conservative beliefs. In terms of how you fit that into your personhood, or if you do at all, do the worlds ever touch, like, in terms of your sex work and also your personal creative output? Do you view one as an extension of the other, or is it its own separate entity?
I mean, I definitely view it as an extension of my artistic practice. With the caveat that, like, to make money in sex work, there is some degree of, like, feigning interest that has to happen, you know, like,
oh, hell right, yeah. Like, absolutely.
Like, porn Twitter Carta is always horny, right? And, like, always 100%.
Absolutely.
Right. Always 100% of the time, like, oh, I wish I was fucking someone. Or, you know, if someone responds anything, I'm going to favorite it, you know, unless it's, like, really heinous. Any response.
Oh, my God. I already know who you're talking about, too. It's like these dudes on Twitter whose, like, avatars are, like, what's a polite way to say this? It's, like, late 90s trans women,
yes,
and shit.
Yes.
With, like, their dicks out, or just a set of balls and pubic hair.
Yeah.
Or just an asshole. Just an asshole. Yeah. Just a butthole, apropos of nothing.
Yeah.
And
PFP butthole.
There's, like, cum brain. There's, like, cum brain people. And then there are, like, porn savvy consumers who, you know, I'm not going to try to read too much into their whole deal, but are very much aesthetically into what trans women offer, and then sort of kind of allied desire solely from fetish.
Right.
And it's an observable phenomena if you've ever done sex work and been trans, because it's like a certain type of guy. Whereas, I don't know, if your cis counterpart or your cis passing counterpart maybe sees your more traditional het dudes that are just like, yeah, I think it's cool to see her naked boobs.
Right.
Like, that's as far as it goes. I like her boobies. It's cool. Uh-oh, that's very hot. They all, like, post like my dad, but about sex in a way my dad never would. And, you know, for me, I can't speak for you, but, like, personally, I don't know if I could do that. I've always been more of a exhibitionist, or maybe like an aesthetics person, where if I showed people X amount of things, it was from a point of like, hey, let's make this bitch some money, or B, I'll just be the tastemaker and say, hey, doing cool shit. Hey, look at this guy with a pussy. Cool for him. He's got a really cool haircut that isn't too fucked up, etc. And as far as that goes, it's kind of interesting observing, like, the people wearing many hats, and of course, as I said earlier, the people that are always like, you're commoditizing your relationships and you're doing everything fake. So it's like, it's really funny to think about that, and service work, like generalized service work. America isn't really doesn't have a working class, in my opinion. It has more like a service class. We don't have a command economy. We don't make things. We sell services to one another. I feel it would be more accurate to describe it that way. Mm-hmm. Like, manufacturing, if you want it to come back in the way that it was, whereas, you know, you can aesthetically try to jack off all over your own face in nostalgia and show all of these pork pie hats and dudes and overalls and shit, but the coal miners ain't coming back. The manufacturing jobs ain't coming back. It's we're all just selling shit to one another made for the lowest bidder from another country that isn't our own. So in terms of that, like, yeah, sex work is sort of wrapped up in that same overall culture. In terms of your sex work, like as it relates to yourself as an artist also, do you ever, ever have a moment internally where you ever consider, I don't want to phrase this, like do you feel like it's your own motivation to artistically express yourself in your sex work?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, it's something I've always had a lot of interest in, and I should make it clear, I've never done full service sex work. Like, that's something that might very well happen in the future, but it's not something I've currently ever done.
Oh,
so.
Shit. Yeah, I'm not going to be after school special with you, but, like, if you don't have to, fucking don't.
Yeah, no, that...
If you can just do it creatively, just do that. That's not slapping your wrist or whatever. Some people do full service and it's like, that's fine. I have no condemnation, but that's a rough fucking scene.
No, I feel you. I feel you. And like, you know, it's more of a like never say never. because like everything that I've ever said, oh, I don't think I'll ever blah blah blah, like, you know, here I am making making all my money off of porn. But you know, I would say that like I really am into it. Like there's some amount of like day to day stuff that like I do more because it's business. You know, like I try and tweet a sexy picture every day on my porn account. And like that comes more from wanting to keep people remembering that I exist than it does like a genuine kind of horniness. But I would say like my experiences with like making porn and sharing it have been very much like, yeah, an extension of the same kind of vulnerable artistic work that I was already doing. And I would say like,
and it's
playful,
a...
you know, go ahead.
That's true. Yeah. I don't have criticisms. I always try to like think of what that means as an overarching thing. I try to think in terms of outcomes now, because the current modern moment is attacking something as it happens and having an idea about something as it happens. But the fucking weird thing with sex work is that it's kind of, there's all that taboo, right? About work, what is debasing yourself, what is not debasing yourself. And, you know, people talk very negatively about sex work and sex workers. You do this to your body. You do all of this for attention. Like, Carter, I've never seen you advocate for the killing of a specific type of group of people. I've never seen you advocate for war or bigotry against a certain type of person. And, you know, obviously some sex workers have beef with them, whatever. They can all fucking die, eat shit and die, parody, redacted, Minecraft. But the thing is, like, that bit of autonomy as it relates to that is what fucking pisses off a lot of people. As though you could never enjoy a job or a pathway you've had to elevate yourself in a certain way, which, I mean, is weird. My horniness has always been more exhibitionist-wise. In terms of sex work, I've never done video stuff or et cetera in the way that you have. I just did full-service stuff. in a capacity where it was basically survival sex work, right? Which, you know, obviously that can color your opinions on this shit in a very specific way, but honestly, if you can get it and you're happy doing it, fucking do that. I think it's great that you are happy fucking people and stuff, or fucking yourself, or fucking inanimate objects.
Yeah, I
that's wonderful.
Makes you happy.
I am, like, you know,
we love to see it.
I've had a lot of jobs, and I know a lot of people who make porn would say the same thing. I've had a lot of jobs. When I was a teenager, I worked in a Midwestern cornfield. I've worked in like offices, and I've done like call center shit, and I've done
I swear to God, it's like a fucking mirror. I'm not trying to fucking I've literally done dairy work, and I've literally worked in call centers.
Right. Yeah. It's, I mean, like, I feel like it's like you and I have like
we're very, a Michigan brain right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. Very comparable kinds of experiences. And like, honestly, making porn is not only the best job I've had, but also the best paying job I've ever had, bar none.
Yes.
Like, I'm making real adult money for the first time. And like, of course, it's all freelance. And so there's like, you know, taxes that you need to keep in mind, blah, blah, blah. But like, I don't know. It just feels fucking like my time is being valued. Like, if I can get on OnlyFans and get some, you know, sissy faggot to give me $400 for telling him that his dick is tiny, and that's, you know, an hour of work, that feels like my time is being valued in a way that it never did at
right,
any of
right,
those other
yeah.
jobs.
And the outside,
that's good output.
And the outside looking in view is like, oh, okay, so you just take advantage of people and like prey on their inability to fucking live their life or be able to reach out to people. But it's like, no, a lot of people that are into the shit that they're into specifically. But I say this mainly about leftist scolds about their shit. The right are always going to just talk constantly like they have a concussion. Like, they are incapable of X amount of abstraction.
It's a more simple type of criticism.
It's a more simple type of criticism. It's a moralist-based criticism. And the left moralist position fucking infuriates me, because it's like, oh, you can never uplift yourself. You can never do anything. It's all commodities. Go fuck yourself. Eat shit. And, you know, personally, yeah, you are happy doing what you do. And there is a construction of different employed voices. There's like an agreement between the sissy faggot whatever and you. That there's a level of unreality to it, which is why I sort of asked you earlier about how you feel as an artist as it relates to this, because there's also that sort of level with artistry. Maybe people don't even recognize it when they make things, but it's also a soft ask, but it's still an ask, which is that, you know, we have these terms. We know not everything is going to be 100% true or real. That's going to be up to your individual ability to engage with the work and think about it. Think about it critically. And it's weird thinking about that in terms of pornography, because there are so many cultural taboos about it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And like, I don't know, I spend hundreds of dollars on shit that makes me happy, and I don't feel like I'm being exploited. Like, I, you know, I just,
right.
on, as Diskette, I just had like a cheap old Polaroid camera refurbished for like hundreds of dollars by a person who's really good at doing that. And like, that's for me, you know, like that's because like, I think that's cool and I want to be able to take pictures with this specific camera in this specific way. And it makes me feel good to like give money to this person who knows how to do it. And I pretty much let that person command their own price because I think they're worth it. And it feels the same to me when like, if someone is coming to me and paying me a lot of money, that is entirely their choice. And I know that it's making them feel good to like give me that, you know, and like show me that kind of attention.
It's one of the weird things about sex work. Like, anytime you watch pundits or whatever on TV, or even outside of politics, where people are trying to convey an idea or this or that, in terms of outcomes, sex workers, once someone comes, you have an incredibly specific idea of what led them to that point. And in a weird way, intimacy and connection, I don't want to say a one-to-one value, but it's right the fuck there, because that's about as intimate as you can get. Yeah. Cultivating that experience and having that outcome, which is wild to think about. So I sort of, on some level, if I could empathize with a lot of the people that have these taboos and hangups, it would be that. Like, I can look at a, you know, without tooting my own horn, I can look at some people and think, oh, so he's this kind of guy, just based on an accumulation of experiences and interactions with someone in their most private self.
Yeah, absolutely.
Opening up to someone enough to be that intimate with them.
And like when people try and levy the criticism that like you're taking advantage of lonely people or whatever, I don't know, like, I watch fucking AGDQ streams. Like, there's people, especially in this age, they're like, you play Zelda good. Here's $2,000. Nobody's ever saying you're taking advantage of the $2,000 Zelda guy, you know?
Right.
My grandma's dead. Hit that fucking Halo glitch run.
I am so fucking
$10 donation. R.I.P. grandma.
I'm so fucking sick of these no clipping simps. It's sickening to me. They just keep going through doors. They keep launching themselves through cars in GTA 4 and always having people subscribe to their OnlyFans. Okay.
That's an especially good point in the age of Twitch streaming, most especially AGDQ being like a huge example of that, is that like we're all doing this on a not sexual basis with each other anyway for a lot of these things. It's just sort of becoming the way.
Let me tell you something, Jake. Twitch's current model wasn't the first model of that direct response. You know what it was? Fucking chatterbait.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure.
The bits, those are coins. Like Twitch is the socially acceptable form of simping.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, Jake, we're going to have to do a bunch of notes for edits for this episode. I need to use the restroom immediately, if that's fine. I apologize.
That's fine.
Sorry for the wind up, but like, well, holy Christ.
We can keep hitting it. I did want to talk some to Carter about.
Yeah, totally.
So yeah, we'll just do that, and I can keep running with something here. Oscar, I did want to pitch you a hypothetical sequel. Obviously not as a good idea, but just what you think of some of my thoughts here. So Napkin, it was, right, was the please comment on the sexual escapades or endeavor, however you want to put it.
Yes.
Wait, so okay, here's something I probably didn't get right the first time. When you were gathering the commentary, did you tell them why?
Yeah, I did.
That is a good question.
Yeah, I did. I said I'm working on a zine about my sex life, and it feels important for me to like get the voices of the people I'm actually sleeping with in there. So I would ask that you fill this out, you know, as honestly as you can, and it will be published. And a couple people signed their cards, and I blacked out their name in the final scene.
Nice. Yeah.
Let me see. So as a potential follow-up with your current foray and career choices of sex work in a fun, having a good time, what if there was an approach from the perspective of mastery over fucking, and that would be criticism cards, and only accepting critiques.
Oh no!
Of the fucking, please tell me. you know, have a graph. You could have a graph. You know, try and get like a rough timing.
Are
down.
You trying to get a fucking anime skill chart graph? No, is this your end goal? Is this your end goal here, Ruben?
A hexagonal graph.
The hexagon.
The hexagonal. The 5-point stat graph may not come into play.
Are we all going to have a Naruto profile?
I think what might be more might be better would be you might need to use like a chess timer or something, and you give them a timeline, and then they would, and then you write in. 0000 to when you finished fucking, and then you kind of have them chart out where did you think, you know, like make a bell curve for me of like where were the highs for you here.
Hold up, I'm gonna stop you right there. A bell curve?
Can you tell that Ruben's a board game designer?
They would do like a line graph. So like you have the timeline, right? And then you're like, hey, we fucked for 55 minutes 38 seconds. That's the end of the timeline. And then you give them the card, and it's probably a big piece of paper. It's not a card anymore. And you write in the end time, and then you're like, I need you to chart what was like just personally, what were the highs and lows for you? Do me a quick line graph, higher on the chart, you know, scale 0 to 10, with time being the x-axis, y just being satisfaction levels or preference, and then have them do symbols along the timeline, and then write on the back what those correspond to.
I love that.
Thank you.
What's a cross?
You need to write up a design document for this room.
Not need to write up a design document for this.
I'll send that to you.
The way you shouldn't fuck people. A cross means the head was trash. A triangle means you need.
Well, no. The symbols say there's a comet at this point in the timeline. So the 15 minute 6 second mark, there's a star. So you gotta look at the back of the sheet and be like, what happened to 15 minutes? And you were like, too much teeth. And so, you know, it could be something.
I just
like
imagine
that.
Someone like rifling through a stapled set of of papers, like while they're fucking, and just being like, oh, jeez, wait a second. I gotta go back to page two.
My first thought was clipboard.
To fuck with them, staple Scantron clipboard as like a second page. Just staple Scantron to it.
Yeah.
So after they do the graph, they think it's coming.
Please fill this out, you know, as accurately and quickly as possible. Yeah, I mean, like,
here's a booklet.
I think the problem with that proposal is that, like, speaking as someone who, like, has had a fair amount of sex on camera, a lot of the time when I revisit the sex that I had, I don't remember like 80% of it. Like, if someone rails you for an hour, it's all gonna blur together at a certain point.
What I was gonna get at was. Yeah, so I'm curious about this because I know about like mass produced porn fucking production methods, which is that it's multiple takes. It's like a film. You've got like upwards of 15 people watching you have unprotected sex with someone,
right?
After going through all of your vetting processes or this or that. In terms of DIY video making on that front, is it just one and done? Do you just go through it and then bing, bang, bong?
So it depends. I would say the fanciest setups I've ever done have had two cameras.
Hell yeah.
Where I have like an app on my phone that lets me have like multi-timeline video editing, basically. And I always do some amount of editing because there's always going to be something in there that like looks awkward or someone repositions or like it's a bad angle or whatever.
Are you doing the blocking for those?
What did you say?
Are you doing the blocking for those? Like setting up the initial angles?
Yeah. I mean, like basically I set up the cameras in ways that I think I can sort of switch between where it's like, if it's not good here, it'll be good here. And then at that point it's like, okay, so we'll fuck for a while in like one position or whatever, and then if we switch it up then things might change. I might have my partner hold the camera, I might hold the camera myself. So like it's very on the fly, and very dependent on like what both people are up for. You know, like we always talk a little bit about like what we want, you know, especially if I'm filming with another performer who has like a specific sort of brand that does not super gel with mine, we might need to do two sets of clips, one for me, one for them.
Oh yeah.
So like, you know, I'm my quote unquote brand for porn is like an intimate peek into my actual sex life is sort of how I'm selling it. But you know, if I'm with someone who's like, I'm a dom and I only top, then like, we can't have like video where I'm fucking them for their page. So we need to do something different. So, you know, we'll plan it out and sort of get as much as we can. And then afterwards, I'll go through and edit things down. And it's not super like highly produced, but you know, I have some like LED ring lights and things like that. So like, it at least looks as nice as I can get it.
That's the weird thing. Like for me personally,
you don't like ring lights?
No, man. Now, Cardi, you're out of the Discord right now, but basically I actually like Ruben's sort of mood lighting, Arizona hillbilly cyberpunk lighting. That's very nice.
It's just an LED strip. What the? Well, he lives in Arizona, and it's an LED strip.
The brightness and the greenness. Are you fucking with me?
Yeah, the greenness. I'll give you the greenness.
I like green. Don't be an asshole.
Like grime.
It looks great.
Like
art. Michelle, talk about more things our listeners can't see.
Art angels. Art angels.
We'll put a picture in the show notes. Y'all can see the rustic brass bell I have. That's a bird standing on a faucet with a dinner bell under it. And my sign, my farmhouse sign that says "I don't carrot all" with a picture of a carrot under it.
You're going off with these carrots.
Also, if you haven't bought your 2021 calendar, I have lammies and pajamas and goats and coats for this year.
Holy shit! I see that finally. I thought it was that's a guy, but it's a lamb.
No, it's a lamb. Clothing. In pajam.
Head, yep.
Hell yes. But what I was going to ask Carter was, all right, so this is, again, one of those anomaly situations, like, because we've had very similar but also incredibly different arcs within our lives. Mm-hmm. Intimacy or whatever. I mean, you don't have to answer or whatever. You get edited out. But in terms of, like, actual personal enjoyment from sex work or whatever, because some shit that you're good at, you enjoy, straight up, like in terms of that and your sex work, was that like, do you have fun, I guess, doing whatever you do in that, like fucking people, being fucked, etc.?
Yeah, I would say so. It is separate from my, you know, personal romantic life, and like there is a pretty big difference between filming something and having a hookup, you know. Like
absolutely,
when I film something, there's just so much more, I don't know, like it's work. Like I wouldn't even call it having sex as much as I would like working with a person. And there's an understanding that like we might need to stop at any time. We might need to reposition. I don't want to be fucking when the cameras are off, because I would prefer not to blur that line as much as possible. Like, it's a little more complicated.
Right. There actually are ground rules.
Sex work is very much a blurred lines thing, and I'm very happy you said that phrase. Like, for me, I was like very big into straight up dissociating, but not necessarily in the traumatic dissociation sense. It's more like, I don't know, a sort of zen or philosophical sense. You take yourself somewhere else because you're going to be there for a while.
Right.
And that sounds very crazy, but I was thinking about the, what was that game? The words Edith Fincher in it.
What remains of Edith Finch?
There's a segment in What Remains of Edith Finch where the guy basically makes his work in a cannery into a high fantasy series of situations. Yeah. You know, until he dies. I think he kills himself purposefully or inadvertently, however, but the whole through line of it is dissociation, where basically he puts himself somewhere else because the drudgery of his life and what the work takes out of him clearly is something he can't put back.
Right.
And with sex work and intimacy, if I've ever felt like sort of envious about people that sort of do things in a not full service capacity, has been like, you could be artful with it, you can have a direction, you have a clear delineation of work, but there is a personal connection and a sort of wavelength you're both hitting. Which is different than like, I need to not be here. Which, yeah, if I ever thought of doing something like that, like, honestly, it's the better of the two.
Yeah.
As opposed to just being, like, after school special about it.
I'm happy to say that, like, I dissociate so much less than I used to, and that's mostly just a transition thing. But
yeah.
when I'm filming with someone, I would say, like, yeah, I wouldn't want to film with someone who I had like zero attraction to, is I guess what I'll say. Like, the people who I film with, I consider them my friends, you know, like friends and coworkers. And in some cases the line is more blurred because I'm dating the person I'm filming with previously, you know, like we're already dating. But even then it's like we have to approach it with an understanding that like, okay, what we're doing now is work and not our relationship. Yeah. You know,
and a lot of people can be like, oh, I have no point of reference for this, but then you look at it throughout media and there are God knows how many husband and wife, partner, whatever sort of duos working on shit with one another.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, and if you're married and you're in a movie together, it's clearly not the same as your marriage, right? Like, right. And it feels similar. Like,
unless the film was like Eyes Wide Shut,
right?
Then it's like this is an allegory for all of the horror in the world,
right? I haven't made any like horror allegory porn at this point, but like.
I would suggest it, but don't give it the Eyes Wide Shut angle.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. It feels separate. And I was really getting much more into filming with other people before, again, like the pandemic stuff hit, and that put a big damper on my ability to like do anything like that. So I'm excited once it's more safe to film with other people, mm-hmm. because like up to this point, you know, I've certainly hooked up a lot, but I've never traveled outside of the state for, you know, porn stuff, and I would love to, like, I would love to work with more professional people with more experience than me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's a mixed scene. Personally, the other fear I personally have is like, let's say, I don't know, let's say I got like X amount of surgeries or whatever I wanted. Mm-hmm. My voice was all chill, did hella good voice training. I don't sound like a grandpa. You go through all of that shit. Yeah. Would porn be okay? Sounds a lot more fun than whatever the fuck I was doing, but I don't think I'd want to work with, like, studios. I feel like trans porn studios are full of people that should be both parodied and redacted.
I
within Minecraft.
I feel that. And, like, I don't know. Like, when I say like people with more experience or like more professional, it's not necessarily like, you know, I don't want to film for, you know, shemalewhatever.com.
You don't want to, you don't want to film for Shemale Young or Groobies Raw Dog Trannies Unleashed.net.
Yeah, I mean, like, the obviously, like, there's always
you're being very condemning and not sarcastic at all.
There's like some amount of money that someone could offer me where I would consider it. But no one's gonna pay that amount of money. I think, like, the thing that interests me is, you know, like, I would love to direct porn for kink.com, for example. I think I would be really good at it.
Oh, shit. It's a mixed bag, but, you know, I'm not judging. Sorry, I'll shut the fuck up.
No, you're fine. I mean, like, I think I would be good at it, at writing and directing porn scenarios. And there's like certain more professional people who I've talked to who I would love to film with, you know, and like some slightly more professional sites. Like I might end up filming for something like Naughty Naturals, which is a site where like, you know, they feature like girls with armpit hair or whatever. You know, yeah, sure. Oh, why not? Like that feels like the kind of porn that I looked at when I was in middle school, so I might as well.
Certainly more niche. Yeah.
Some Bush League stuff.
Fuck wow. You, Ruben.
Coming in hot.
Coming in hot.
With the fresh takes.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got them. Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. In terms of that, it's, you know, I wouldn't speak out of turn because that's your scene. That's not my scene. But I mean, we got scenes, you know, you haven't done full service. I cannot stress this enough. I am not being an after school special about this. If you do full service sex work, not Cardamonier, but the world, it will not be artful. It's just about the money. It can only be about the money. Never go through someone who's a facilitator that thinks of you as a contractor unless, I don't know, like, what I'm just basically saying is never have a pimp. Never have a fucking madam.
Glad you clarified.
And if you do that sort of shit, and if you are one of those type of people, you deserve nothing but the worst, and you are sickos, and I fucking hate you, and I wish nothing but misery for you. And post Fosta Sesta, I don't know how vetting shit works now. I never vetted. I was a fucking moron. But just bear that in mind. It's just about the money. I can't pretend to think about your philosophy or this or that, and I can't make that choice for you, but full service is not production-based stuff. Right. You have more control in that venue. The blurred lines are louder in full service.
Yeah.
Because of, I would say, maybe the weird overhanging taboos and maybe personalized view of darkness associated with it. Which is different than most forms of work, but still hews towards being drained by work. You just get drained by work in a much different way.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that have incredibly addictive personalities within that, or people that are just getting lost in the sauce of that because they almost sort of resign themselves to thinking, I'm actually like a service to sort of be utilized. You sort of lose a sense of self, and it's very hard. And there are different forms of fucking full service. Like, you know, the people that walk the street, holy shit, here's a group of people that is braver than the troops. People that do full service walk in the street sex work, and especially if you're trans, if you do that fucking job, you automatically enter yourself into the pool of people that have a much higher chance of being murdered than the rest of the population. That's how desperate you are if you're doing it in those terms. If I ever leveraged identity in a certain way, it would be that, like, those people are among some of the most hated or disparaged groups of people, but they're also some of the most desperate groups of people. They do not choose to do things in that way. They've been brought there because there's no other choice. That's fucked up and it's weird, but, like, it is what it is. And so it's kind of why I ask you about it. I feel much more kinship in terms of art and creative stuff insofar as comics. Mm-hmm. But in terms of sex work and to give out, in terms of creativity and in terms of output, a lot of people have very differing opinions about that. Some people would make the premise, and I won't, but, like, yeah, no, why you do sex work is because it's more financially viable and because, like, yeah, you don't make as much fucking money on comics or whatever. And it's like, that's a very judgmental take, but that's, like, how a lot of people who are anti-sex work or save people from themselves sort of mindset feel.
Right.
And it's wild. You know, honestly, it's very relieving to hear that, like, it's more work than anything else for you, but it's fulfilling work in some way or another. Like, do you feel good doing what you do after you do it?
Yeah, I do.
Are you, like, happy?
I mean, like, I've never, I guess just on, like, a really basic level, like, I've never had a job where, like, part of my job is, like, hundreds of people I don't know constantly telling me that I'm hot, you know? Like, none of right. the hourly jobs I've ever had, like, if anything, I've been much more abused and degraded at hourly jobs than I ever have doing sex work. And I mean, the thing about online sex work that really differentiates it from almost any other kind of job is that, like, you have the ability to block people and set boundaries that are, like, fucking easy to set, you know? Like,
yeah.
You
could tell people to fuck off.
Right.
Sure.
Which is huge. Yeah. Like, if someone is being a fucking creep to me, you know, in a way that feels dangerous or I don't like, I don't have to worry about it too badly. And that's not the case for full service, which is, like, part of why I really try and be very upfront about, like, what type of sex work I do, because I see a big difference between what I do and people who do full service in terms of, like, the experience and the risk. I have a lot of respect for people who do full service.
Yeah, yeah.
For that reason.
Well, yeah, no, as someone who has done full service, it's like, because of the blurred lines, I almost sort of wonder, like, damn, I wonder what this would have been like if it were fun.
Right.
Or I had more input in it, like anything else. But beyond that, it's just also, yeah, if the two that are safer, and don't get me wrong, doing online sex work as opposed to, like, full service is not without any risk, but it's just a different pool where it isn't as immediate, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a different type of risk. And, like, you know, I make porn under my real legal name, which is something that a lot of people think you should never, ever, ever do. But my feeling about it is very much like, I don't know, there's nobody who could find out about what I do who doesn't already know, or I don't, you know, like, there's no family I'm worried about.
Mm-hmm.
There's no employer I'm worried about. My spouse's employer is cool. Like, we're good.
Yeah.
I feel pretty okay.
In terms of just kind of shift completely, wanted to talk to you also kind of about I say just recognition, but in terms of personal recognition, you've been nominated as well as awarded a few things. Mm-hmm. trying to remember. It was an Ignatz Award, right?
Yep, I got an Ignatz Award. And I got the CXC Emerging Artist Award.
I'm trying to remember. Was one of them a sort of comic slash pictorial essay about Lara Croft?
Yeah.
That
was the Ignatz.
But if you kind of want to like walk through the uninitiated, like just briefly, like the subject matter of that one.
Yeah, that was a piece I did for Zeal. I don't know if Zeal is still going, but for a while it was.
Zeal's last update, I think, was like in 2019 or 2020. It's been like kind of a mixed bag.
Okay, so that's
I was in Zeal too.
Jay Bear had an AVB.
I would love to have those two.
Yeah, the best. ran like a medium, like blog thing. That's funded through Patreon. Yeah. That was like video game criticism and essays and things like
very
that.
Very ahead of the curve.
Very, very ahead of the curve. And I did a comic for them about my sort of like talking about like my childhood and then mother's death through the lens of the communal video gaming that our family would do. Like as a family, we played through basically every Tomb Raider game. And by as a family played through, I mean like watched my father play through.
Mm-hmm.
So that comic was like one of the first big ones after I came out that like got attention on its own. And won the Ignatz Award, which is the one of the awards given by the Small Press Expo, which happens every year in Bethesda.
SPX in Portland, right?
No, in Bethesda, Maryland.
Yeah, up to the East Coast.
I fucked that up. I was not that far away from Bethesda at a certain time when I lived in Baltimore. But yeah, sorry.
Yeah. So it's available to read online still if anyone is interested. And the comic is called Lara Croft Was My Family.
We could probably link that in the show description.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And another thing I kind of wanted to ask about was God, it's killing me right now.
Well,
what's that?
I have something. Oh, yeah, I have a segment that I'm going to make you do. Michelle, it's time.
What's up?
For the oral history of Cardamonier's Dick Fan Club t-shirt.
Okay, yeah. No, this will definitely jog my memory. So,
Michelle, how did this t-shirt come into being?
All right. So, in terms of thirst or this or that or whatever, do I want to fuck people all the time? Do I think certain people are attractive or more attracted to others? Living human being. I'm not a corpse. I want to fuck stuff, or I can appreciate fuckable stuff without being a fucking weird guy. Fast forward many years later. Cardamonier, one of the first instances of publicly seeing her penis, I was like, whoa. You guys, check out this penis. I was telling many people. Many were saying.
When you say you guys, you mean your Twitter followers. I want to clarify.
I was saying to them.
Like, at the time.
I was saying, at the time. I was like, this penis. This is a cool penis. Everyone, if you think about penises, you know, there's like a guy penis. But then there's the lady penis, significantly softer. When it's hard. It's really cool, but Cardamonier's penis looks like a difficult scenario. Not like it would be painful specifically, but it would be like, hey, can we talk this out? What do we got to do? Is this, you know, is this like is this like a bodily injury risk? There's only one other person I've thought of in this capacity when I thought of someone would be like Carter, you probably know of them or know them personally. Dominique Riston.
Oh, Riston, I think.
Riston, fuck.
We've never met in person, but I am, yes, I mean, absolutely familiar.
Dominique, prior to being a gender non-conforming person, but was always androgynous, and then just straight up going girl mode. One of the hugest dicks I'd ever seen in my life. Like,
yeah, that dick is unbelievable.
Woo! Yeah, no,
if you ever if you have ever followed Michelle on Twitter,
you could
know
fuck
what we're
open a
about.
Door with that dick. You could bust out a window with that dick. You know how people always used to make jokes about killing someone with an Xbox by throwing it off a building?
Yeah.
Dom could put their dick through your head easily and you would die and wouldn't
dangerous to draw
about it. Carter, however, penis wise. Like, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, if you know the concept of the jaws of life where, like, you just put this large wedge into a door and it tears it open? Just imagine that, but, like a birth canal. And that's Carter's dick. And, yeah, then she just put it on a shirt. What did, you know, the only famous quote I have on a shirt.
My friend.
Okay, now card is.
Yeah,
end.
My friend David, who runs Sebe, which is a like a shirt company.
Word.
Really likes when I talk about like comments I've gotten on my porn, and I thought that Michelle's comment was really good, so I shared it on my secret Twitter. And David, like, came to me with the shirt design ready-made. He was like, I made this if you want to sell them. And I was like, yeah, I think so.
That's a great moment of serendipity right there.
We kind of talked about this before you'd gotten in, but another interesting sort of in thing about the shirt is, the way the text wrap works, as well as if you have a functioning knowledge of Carter's dick, is that like the text that I wrote basically maps, not one-to-one, but pretty similar, like this sort of Christmas tree like wedge outline of the text and the shirt. And I have the shirt in my household. One of my favorite shirts.
We will put a picture of Michelle wearing the shirt on the show
notes. If you want a good shirt that's comfortable, that is about a penis, that you're like, damn, can I? Question mark? Three question marks? Then it's the shirt for you. No question.
Yeah.
Order not. And I'm not just saying that because it's one of my many famous quotes on it. In terms of famous quotes, I have like a famous quote about a guy that I can't remember his name. All I know about the guy is that he still stalks me and that he's a member of a stalking message board that every few months like talks to people about his grudges against me and shit. He's like some sort of boomer that is into lolicon.
Do you need me to say?
No.
Kurt?
No, Kurt Kurt Eichenwald is not into lolicon.
Wait, that's another thing. I'm crossing wires.
He's into
wires.
Tentacles, Jake. Get your fucking
wires.
Story straight. He's some Texas guy. He's some Texas guy that was called a faggot most of his life. And then he's one of those dudes that's like, actually, I like being a bully and like, boys are necessary in society. I joined both the army and the marines. I will never commit suicide. I'm actually very secure in my personhood. He's a normal guy, but the thing is, like, that's the only other quote. Is me and IEDs or really, really thinking about cool penises? There are a lot of penises out there. People always say Michelle Perez and buttholes. They do the cross the fingers gesture in the air. But no. No, there's also penises, my guy. And like, in terms of penises, you've got to look to the future. People should really be thinking about Carter Monier's penis. I'm saying this all the time, constantly. Did you hear or not hear?
I heard you saying there's a lot of cool penises out there, my guy.
Yeah, that sounds about right. No, it's not just buttholes for me. And you know, penises are cool too. And I'm tired of pretending they aren't.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I mean, I really appreciate the support that you've given my dick.
Yeah, this is Michigan solidarity right
Thank
now.
Thank you.
Personally, as an artist, like, I wouldn't say, because Eliza has always said this, if you like interrogate someone in a specific way, I will quit. I'd say, no, it's a constant threat. And it's like the only good threat, which is like, don't be boilerplate. Don't be a bitch ass. But I mean, in terms of maybe not just you specifically, but what you want to see out there as an artist creating things and, you know, what you'd like to see moving forward into a future.
A lot more
recently.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, you shoot first.
I want a lot more vulnerable trans shit. I love vulnerable trans shit. I love, like, everybody just freaked out about how good Detransition Baby is. It's really fucking good.
Everyone really likes Detransition Baby. I know there's a lot of inside baseball in it. One of the detransitioners' names is Ames.
Yeah.
And that's incredible level of inside baseball. As soon as I saw A-M-E-S, I was like, oh, so that's what we're talking about.
This is so inside baseball, I don't know who you're talking about.
Jonathan yeah, you might need Ames. To clarify for everybody.
Jonathan Ames.
Oh, interesting.
Do you know anything about Jonathan Ames?
I've heard the name before, but no.
All right, no. So real shit. Jonathan Ames, author who had done like anthology stuff about, let's see here. He'd worked on Bored to Death and Blunt Talk, where Patrick Stewart was basically fawning over a former trans partner. But Jonathan Ames basically was a anthology, Sexual Metamorphosis, an anthology of transsexual memoirs. So the opposite, in my mind, thinking about Napkin mm-hmm. and the sort of oral history, if you will, about your own sex life, is a sort of cis view of transsexuality that has come to mark a great deal of Jonathan Ames' career.
Okay.
Basically, if you wanted to think of Jonathan Ames, think of a New Yorker who has had money, but whose dick has gotten around roughly the same amount mine has. But like, there was not a lot of consideration about the fact that there were a lot of transgender sexual partners, and like, whew, oh my God, that's a Jonathan Ames, interesting guy. I'll say personally, without litigating his whole deal, but yeah, the character of Ames, I need to read through the book. Tori Peters is a very good writer that is getting her own due sort of notice. Seeing Detransition Baby in like Oprah's book club or whatever is fucking wild.
It is,
in my mind,
completely wild. And I mean, like, I should say, having read the book, I don't think that this character is based on anybody real particularly.
No, it's more like, if you know, you know. And like, someone named Ames, you know, I don't know what's in her heart, but bitch, if that's a nod, that's a fucking good nod. Well played. But yeah, it's so wild. I was thinking about this. I was talking with some friends earlier.
Oh, God fucking damn it.
Dear listeners, if you don't know this, you probably know it by now. A musician by the name of Sophie died recently. And it was weird. It wasn't a miserable death, but it was a fucking shitty death. And that it was an accidental death. No one murdered her. She didn't kill herself. It was sad because it was a life full of potential and output and love. And also something fucking wilder, which is that it's a life that seems to want to leave an imprint beyond the shape and outlines of the person. Sophie was all about fucking with shape and outlines and instead going towards vibrations, towards something beyond what we can articulate with words, feelings, or visuals, and instead sound. And beyond sound, just what you feel in straight up vibrations, physically moving oneself. I think what's wild about her whole legacy is imagining a future, not only for trans people, but a world where it's not a thing to litigate or have a didactic component about. No one is being taught. You were just doing it, and it is, and it's great, and it's wonderful being in that process. Which is nuts to me. I think it's why I think about valuing people while they're still around and they're still here. And, you know, not to get too super serious, but it's something about mortality I think about now more than ever. Because, man, the specter of death has just been omnipresent for a fucking year. Which is wild.
And continues. Why,
yeah.
Yeah. Sadly, but...
Yeah. In terms of, you know, not... Oh, God. Did Carta disconnect?
No, I'm here.
Yeah, you were talking.
That's fine.
Carta's back. Oh, you're catching up. Christ, I'm jumping. We've been doing... You were staring out the window, quite literally.
Yeah, no.
We were watching you.
No, man. Just thinking about shit.
Hey, listen, that's your job, baby. It's all good.
In terms of a future you personally could imagine for trans people, you know, beyond platitudes, beyond what we say to people just so they won't fucking blow
Jesus
our heads
Christ.
Off or enact violence or this or that. Like,
did I cut out again? Can you hear me?
You're good. You're back.
For a second. How much did you or didn't you hear?
A future that you can imagine for trans people beyond the platitudes, beyond what we tell other people.
Yeah, yeah. Like, because here's the thing. We were talking about all this dog shit, all of this or that, but, you know, beyond our specific experiences, you and me, like, for everybody, like, broadly. How do you feel about that? Like, what could futures look like for us in your mind? Because I feel like we need to value that shit. You can just fall off a fucking roof trying to look at the moon, or whatever, as she did, and it won't negate or whatever about your legacy. If anything, more people have been emboldened. Shit. After talking to some pals of mine, like, we're probably going to change the direction of our book entirely. Just thinking about the future. What if we did something stupid, like imagining us being alive and happy? What does that look like to you?
Mm-hmm. I mean, my hope is always, like, I would say, like, I hope for a community that is more forgiving and, like, understanding of, like, people's positions and empathetic.
I think right now so much of like online queer space is defined by like an antagonistic kind of drive, where it's like all of the prickliness that queer people have grown, you know, as like a hard outer shell has now been turned inwards towards our own community. And my like great hope for like the future of trans people and queer people more broadly is just a community that is less willing to completely disown its own members. Which is something I really like about like Detransition Baby, which is what we were talking about, Tori's book. Like, it's a book about like trans people who have done, each of them has done unforgivable things and are still being handled with like empathy and compassion and are clearly framed as being deserving of love. And like, that's something that I feel very passionately about.
And on that note, I deeply appreciate you coming to see us. I deeply appreciate you sticking with us despite some of the fucking weird shit, but your perspective is deeply appreciated, and I'm very happy to have had this talk with you, and I really want to have more in the future.
Me too. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.